Welcome to the Romantasy Library.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Romantasy Library. I am your host, Kate Perkins. And today, I'm so excited. I'm going to be talking with Penn Cole, Romantasy author, and author of the series, The Kindred Curse Saga. I have a couple of her books here. That's you, Penn. I'm so excited and honored to be able to talk with you today.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So you were just saying you're in France right now?
I am. I live in Paris, France. I'm from Texas originally, so it's definitely a bit different than home, but I love living here.
That's amazing. Where in Texas are you from?
Dallas.
Yeah, I lived outside of Plano for a little bit. I was a figure skater and ice dancer, and they had a really great skating program there in Plano. So I don't know if it's still that great, but I mean, it might be amazing. I don't know. But
yeah, I used to have a house in Frisco. So
okay.
I lived right in that area.
Nice. So were you born and raised in Texas, in Dallas or Frisco?
Yeah. I am very much a Texas girl. My family is very, very proud of being Texan, as I think a lot of Texans can understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved being raised there. It was great. But as I got older, I just wanted to see more of the world. I wanted to sort of get outside of the bubble that Texas can sometimes be and just experience new cultures, new lifestyle. And so my husband and I moved to France. And it is very different, but it's kind of surprisingly, I think there's a lot in common. Like the people here are very hospitable. They don't have the reputation for being this way, but they are kind of on the inside if you kind of crack through the hard candy shell. They are like so friendly and so welcoming, and they will just sit down and talk your ear off, you know, for hours on end, which is, you know, what I think of. And I think of people back home in Texas, just super friendly, you know, we'll do anything for you if you need it. So
nice.
It does feel a little bit like being home, just a different accent.
Yeah. I love France. My husband and I went for our honeymoon, and we absolutely loved the people. And I mean, everybody was super kind, and yeah, we had a great, wonderful time. So one of my favorite memories actually was one of the nights that we ate there. Like one of the first nights, the chef came out and just kind of like hung out with us while we were eating. It was so cool.
Yeah. It's super common.
It's been great.
Everybody here, well, I guess not everything, but a lot of places here, the restaurants or shops, it really is like their home. You know what I mean? It's going into that place is very much like stepping into sort of their place. And if you, you know, approach it really respectfully and, you know, with the culture in mind, they will make you feel at home. You know, they will give you drinks and sit and chat with you until 2 a.m. And it's great. I love it.
Yeah, that was our experience. We had a great time. So how long have you been in Paris, did you say?
Well, this is our second time moving here. So the first time we were here, we were younger, and we lived here for about 4 years. And then we went back to the U.S. for my husband's job. And then during the pandemic, we kind of had like a life reset, as I think a lot of people did, and said, you know, what do we want out of life? And that's when we decided to move back here. So we've been here since, I think, 2020. So going on 4 years again. So 8 years total, which is wild to think about.
That is so wild. How did you choose? I mean, besides the fact that it's Paris and France is amazing and the wine and the food, I love it all. But how did you guys choose Paris?
Kind of a combination of things. So we actually got engaged here and then we decided to come back for our first wedding anniversary. And that's kind of when we got the idea to move here. My husband had just sold, he works in tech startups, and he had just sold his first company. And I had a job that I could kind of do from anywhere. And so we said, well, if we can live anywhere we want, where do we want to live? And we were here on vacation and we thought, I don't know, this looks pretty cool. And we had been taking French just for fun as like something to do as newlyweds. And so it kind of stumbled into it, but we also, there's a lot of aspects about the culture here that we love. It's very focused on you don't live to work. You know what I mean? You do your job and you work hard when you're at your job, but then when you leave your job, you leave your job, you know, and you go home and you focus on your family or you focus on your personal hobbies or whatever. And it's not the same hustle culture that I think gets emphasized a lot in the US. I actually was an attorney before doing this, becoming an author. And I mean, it was not uncommon to work 80-100 hour weeks on a regular basis. That was just like expected. And it was so normalized that that's just something you do. And I hated that. I, you know what I mean? Like, we have one life to live. We can't spend it, you know, grinding all of the time. And so that was a big part of why we wanted to come here, because we just wanted a more balanced lifestyle where we could do work that we love, but also do other
things. That's incredible. And you're right. Like, I think definitely in America, right? The hustle culture is pretty intense. And I can't imagine working 80 to 100 hours a week. So what type of an attorney were you? And was that in Texas then?
Yes, it was. It was in Dallas. I was a corporate attorney. So I worked for very large companies, kind of helping them buy and sell other companies or raise capital for new startups. And it's not something that should have required 80-hour weeks. We weren't like saving lives. You know what I mean? It was just moving money around, honestly, and signing a lot of contracts. But even still, even though it wasn't the most, you know, pressing, urgent work, that was just the expectation that you be available 24/7 all of the time. And I just don't think that's sustainable for people, you know.
No, it
crushes you very quickly.
Yeah. Burnout, I can imagine, is real in that field. Okay. And it's real in my field too. And I mean, with the high stakes though of money, like working with contracts and money, I can imagine that was a lot of pressure and stress, even though you said that it's not like saving lives. I mean, when you're working with, I'm sure, quite a bit of money in the corporate
world. A lot of money, scary amounts of money. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I would be able to sleep at night. I'd be so stressed.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it was not the least stressful job in the world, but I mean, I also enjoyed it. It was fun working with business owners, and that's always been my background, is working with business owners. That was definitely a higher echelon than I was used to previously, but it kind of is the same all the way up and down the spectrum. People have an idea, they have a service, they are really passionate about it, and they, you know, want to sell it and get it out there. So I find that that's kind of the same, no matter what level you're at.
Yes, absolutely. So how long were you an attorney for?
Gosh, I don't even remember how many years. It wasn't that long, honestly. I think it was 3 or 4 years before I switched over into writing. I intended, when we moved here to France, I intended to keep working as an attorney. And then I just took a leap and started writing instead, and never really looked back.
I am so glad that you became an author. I love your series so much, and I cannot wait to talk more about it and how it's like absolutely grabbed me, my heart. I'm so invested in this story and this series. But how did you meet your husband?
So crazy story. We met on Match.com. At the time, I was working in the wedding industry. And I was not meeting a lot of single guys, as you can imagine, in the wedding industry. My weekends were taken up with weddings. And so I just was having a really hard time meeting people. And so I joined Match.com because at the time that was kind of the thing that was big. So we met, and what's crazy is a week after we met, we actually ended up just completely independently being invited to the same event that had kind of assigned seating, and our seats were assigned next to each other. Completely just random. There was nothing that like put this together. It was just totally random. So we actually would have met and had to sit next to each other for like 3 hours, like a week later after we met on Match.com. So it felt like fate at that point that we were meant to be.
What an amazing meet cute.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. wild.
So when you saw him, what was that like for you? I would have been like, hey, are you stalking me? Just kidding.
It was crazy. It was, well, I mean, we felt like as soon as we met, we felt like something was different. You know what I mean? I've never been with somebody that like the second I meet them, it just feels right, you know? And I had that feeling with him. We got very, very close very, very quickly. And so even though it had only been a week, by that week, we were really close. We had spent like pretty much 24/7 every waking moment talking and getting to know each other. And so that I think kind of escalated things and made us feel very, feel like this was something we needed to hold on to.
Yeah, that's so romantic. I love that. And what year was that in? How long ago was that?
I should know this. It was in 2007, I believe.
Okay.
So we've been together a while.
Yeah. What an incredible story. And gosh, you have done so much in your like past, your past lives.
Yeah.
An attorney. What else have you done? Millennial.
I like to like change my career every few years. I think I'm staying with this one. I think I found the one.
I hope you do.
Up until now, I have very much been a millennial of just like changing my job every 3 to 5 years because I get bored. So, but this one I'm sticking with, I swear.
Well, you clearly have a very creative spirit, you know, and huge talent for writing. So I'm glad that you found this and that you're going to continue doing it. But anyway, yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about some of the other past experiences that you've had? You worked in the wedding industry.
It all kind of weaves together. It's not as random as it sounds. I went to school for writing, actually, and I wanted to become an editor and work in publishing. But when I graduated, I didn't really have the money to go to grad school. And that's kind of the path, you know, into publishing. And so I had been doing photography just on the side during college to pay the bills. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to do this for a couple of years while I save money to go to grad school. And so I did that. I opened a photography business. It kind of took off and was pretty successful. And then I transitioned from that into sort of coaching small business owners and helping them because I've always been very business minded. And, you know, that's a very art forward space. And so a lot of my colleagues were very scared by the business side of things. They didn't understand, you know, finances and pricing and customer service and marketing and all of that. And that's always been something I've really enjoyed and that has come more naturally to me. And so I sort of transitioned into coaching and advising small business owners, which is what inspired me to go to law school. And sort of amp up my knowledge in that area. So then I went to law school, became a corporate attorney, and then now full circle moment back here to being an author, which is, you know, was always what I wanted to do from the beginning.
And I think earlier you did say life, something about life is too short, you know, to not do what you love. And if you're working so hard at a job that's 80 to 100 hours, and it sounds like, I mean, it was something that interested you anyway, but coming back to your passion probably feels pretty incredible, I would think.
Yeah, I joke with my husband a lot that I'm just sort of like checking dreams off the list, like dreams I want to accomplish. And we're very privileged to be able to do that and to have the freedom to sort of pursue all of these different dreams. But yeah, it's just all of these things I've wanted to do throughout my life. And I feel like I'm just very slowly sort of checking off each one as we go. It's very nice. It's not always as, you know, amazing and perfect as it seems, but, you know, we have the privilege to be able to have a little bit of freedom in what we do. And so we're trying to take advantage of it as much as we can.
Yeah, that's incredible. Hey yo, time for an ad. My friend Bree is the proud owner of Miles on Paper. It is an online bookstore where magic and adventure come to life through the pages of indie books. At Miles on Paper, they are passionate about connecting independent authors with readers, and they do this by curating unique blind date book bundles
custom book boxes, blind date puzzles, and a remarkable collection of traditionally published books. By the way, their blind date book bundles are so much fun. I had the honor of getting one myself. I highly recommend. You can find her website at www.milesonpaper.com. Check them out.
Can we talk a little bit more about your love of writing? And I mean, obviously you studied that in college, so that has always been a passion of yours.
Yes, always wanted to write from very, very, very young age. I have just notebooks full of stories from when I was growing up. And I knew all through college I wanted to write like the next great American novel, right? But I never really wrote novels. I really loved writing short stories and even like scripts. And I, for whatever reason, like long form books and especially series was just never really something I thought about doing. I don't know why. So the series that I have published now is the first one I ever wrote, the first like full long form books that I've ever written. But I'm absolutely in love with that. It's writing short stories is fun because you definitely can really play with just different ideas and different concepts and, you know, things like that. But what I love about kind of long form writing is the ability to build a world and to build, you know, nuance into the characters and to weave these plot lines that just get very intricate and complex. So that it's been really fun to sort of do something that I have always loved to do, but do it in a way that I've never done before.
Yeah. That is so interesting that you haven't written a long series like this before. And this series, I feel like, has taken off. I mean,
it's doing pretty well. I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And what a phenomenal like debut for you. And the plot is complex, and it's something like I haven't read anything really like this before. I know that all, you know, a lot of romanticies have our favorite tropes, and those are very present, but the plot is so original. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. So I'm reading, I'm reading Heat right now. I don't want
to hear a lot of stress, a lot of stress for you.
Did you just say, oh dear, to your own book? That's amazing.
I know. Okay. I know.
So your love of writing began when you were very little. Did your family know this about you, obviously? Was it encouraged at home? Like, what was life growing up too for you?
I don't know if it was ever encouraged or discouraged. I mean, I think I was always encouraged to just whatever I do, try and do it really well, you know, and put as much effort as I can into whatever it is that I do. And that's definitely been sort of my life is doing a lot of crazy things, but trying just the hardest I can to do, you know, the best job I can with them. I think I was left alone a lot as a kid. I was very independent. My sister was a lot older, so she wasn't really around. And I think that, you know, that has its pros and cons, but it allowed my imagination, I think, to really thrive. And because I had to create my own sort of, especially when I was younger, my own friends and adventures to go on. And also my family didn't have a ton of money growing up. I did not come from a very rich family. And so we didn't go on vacations ever. We didn't, you know, we lived in a tiny little apartment. And so I did have to create my own world, my own adventures and all of that, you know, that stuff. Cause I only really had what I could imagine. And again, double-edged sword. But for me, I think it did really help with my creativity and help train my brain to sort of have fun envisioning what can be and not just what is.
Wow. Yeah. And you mentioned several times you've mentioned your sister is quite a bit older than you. How much, what's the age gap there?
10 years older. She's 10 years older than me. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a pretty big
So she was around when I was very young, but by the time I was kind of old enough to sort of know what was going on, she was off to college.
Yeah, high school and then college. And well, and I also, I was raised in the 90s too. And I think at that time, you know, the idea too and concept of like turnkey kids where like our parents are working. And I mean, was that sort of your experience as well? Where
very much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much. I walked home alone, even from elementary school to an empty home. And I, you know, would sit down in front of the TV or read a book or whatever and have my snack. My parents would get home a few hours later. Yeah, that's just how it was. You know, that was very normal back then.
It was.
Maybe not so much now, but
Yeah, absolutely. And so that probably helped part of that, like pros and cons, what you were saying, but helped foster your creativity. And from writing all and practicing writing all of those stories probably and sparked them that passion for you.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then how did this idea come to you? The Kindred's Curse Saga, or what compelled you to write it?
Well, a few different things. One of them is a spoiler, so I'm going to try and not say that for anyone listening who hasn't read yet. But the way the first book ends was kind of something that had been in my head of sort of what if this thing happens and what would be the consequences of that. So that was sort of the initial seed. I also just wanted to tell a story kind of about, you know, a world in which, so something I say a lot is like in sci-fi, we get a lot of this, like aliens coming to Earth, taking over the Earth, and how do people react? You know, we get that a lot in sci-fi. We don't get that as much in fantasy. We don't kind of have that sort of, archetype of a story as much. And I thought that was a really interesting idea of like, what if some gods, some these magical gods with powers come and sort of colonize this small sort of isolated continent, a group of people. And how does that, you know, what do we do? What do people do? I think some people would cozy up to them and try and, you know, befriend them and get on their good side. I think some people would rise up and fight against them and form a rebellion. I think a lot of people would just put their heads down and try and survive and, you know, try and not rock the boat. And I thought that interplay of human responses and particularly sort of over many generations, if they stick around, you know, how does that affect humanity and, you know, the communities? It's kind of a parallel to like generational effects of colonialism that we see in the real world. Obviously in fantasy where things are a little bit different, but it's something that's, I'm very politically aware and socially conscious. And so that's something that's always on my mind and thinking about how to examine those issues and those problems. But especially in a fantasy context where you don't have kind of the, you know, a lot of people come into these stories with preconceived notions about who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, and what's right and what's wrong and all of that. And my hope is that within fantasy, they can let go of some of that baggage and see things from a new perspective that maybe they don't in their regular life. And so that was kind of my hope, is that with this story, people could explore some of those issues and maybe maybe open their minds and their hearts a little bit more to some issues that, you know, we do face in the real world and that we're still grappling with today.
Wow. So very layered, very layered.
Yes. Well, I also just wanted to tell a fun love story and have, you know, a fun family. There's definitely, it wasn't all quite so serious, but that was a big driving factor for me in the story.
Yeah. I mean, it is a complex plot. I mean, I feel like there are so many moving parts, and it sounds like you are also wanting to be intentional of readers shifting a perspective as well. And especially having your eyes on some of the political scene and things like that, it makes, that's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Book two, Glow of the Everflame. I mean, some of my perception of I mean, I know that well, I don't know how.
I know. It's hard to talk about it without revealing
too much. Yeah,
I think it's fair to say that our main character, DM, gets thrown into a very different world from her own. And she was raised poor in a very poor, oppressed village among oppressed people. And in our second book, she gets to see how the other side lives and gets to learn about this other world that she's never been allowed to be a part of. So when I originally wrote the series, what happens at the end of book one happened pretty quick in the story. And we really mostly saw this, you know, the descended world that's very sort of elite and rich. And I thought I ended up rewriting it and making it two books because I thought we needed to see more of the mortal world, the poor area that she grew up with and the people that she grew up with. And, you know, those are her people. That's her community. That's sort of who she is inside. And a lot of fantasy stories, we have kind of that thing that's like fish out of water, right? Somebody's taken from their community and sent on to the big city to, you know, do whatever. And we don't see their life in the small village. We know that it means something to them. We know that those people that they're fighting to save mean something to them, but we don't see it as the reader. So I thought it was really important for us to see DM's life and what she's fighting for and the people that she's fighting for throughout the entire series and why it means so much to her. So that was a big part of why I structured the book the series the way that I did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like book one laid a ton of foundation for really displaying DM's heart too. And like what you were saying, her love for her community. I mean, you did a very beautiful job of showing the reader that, I think, and really showing DM's personality and her fear. I mean, she is fierce. She's loyal. She's protective. She's absolutely one of my favorite characters of the female main character. Yeah, absolutely. And some of the banter in this book is
she's got a bad daughter.
I was squealing. I was giggling with some of the dialogue. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so good.
She's the girl we all want to be, right? She's got those good responses. She says all the sassy things in the moment that we all think of later, you know, when we're laying in bed, like, oh, I should have said that. DM says those things. She's ready to go. So it's definitely fun to write her and live vicariously through her in that way. I am a heavy plotter. I like to plot things out way in advance, but even still, you just discover things about your world and your characters as you're writing, you know? And the world that I had built in my head when I started writing book one is not the world that I have now. It grew and, you know, depth. And I think a lot of thinking about characters' motivations and, you know, why they are the way that they are, why they do the things that they do, and building out backstories for me as an author, it's really, really important that every character, not just the main two characters, but that every single character have like a nuanced backstory and, you know, motivations and traumas that they've been through or goals that they're trying to achieve. I don't want any character to just be kind of window dressing. I want them all to have a journey of their own, you know, regardless of how much page time they take up, you know? So that just the process of thinking about, okay, I'm introducing like the little brother, what has his life been like? What does he want out of life? What are his goals? What are his challenges? That kind of helped me build out sort of, you know, everything to do with his story. And the same with, you know, in book two, we meet more of the found family and a lot more of like Luther's family members. And each one of them has their own goals and their own challenges. And that helps to flesh out the world and build it. And, you know, one of the nice things about how I wrote the series, which was as a rapid release, so I pre-wrote the series before I released the books, is that I was able to go back and flesh things out in book one based on decisions that I made for, you know, books two, three, and four down the road. So that, I think, really helped me add some depth to the world by writing them all in advance and holding them a little bit. I don't know that I'll be able to do that again in the future, but yeah, it was a good process. I don't think I'll ever do it again, but it was a good process as a debut author to really think about my series as a complete set before putting it out into the world. Yeah.
And I definitely want to keep talking about that. However, you've said so many wonderful things that I want to come back to. The piece of like really the character development and letting all of the characters have a backstory, that they have traumas, goals, intentions. I love that. I love talking with authors too about that as well. I'm a therapist. I love dissecting characters and really, I mean, I just love that anyway of getting to know people and what their motivations are and what excites them and, you know, yeah, their background. And so I guess what was that process like for you of creating these characters? And they are, I think, so well developed. All of the characters, like I can definitely see that too with the side characters. Some of my favorite side characters are in this series as well. But anyway, so what was that like creating these characters and their goals, their intentions?
Yeah.
What was that process like for you?
Super, super fun. I for me personally, I really like taking a personality and sort of turning it up to 10 for, you know, our side characters. Like Taryn isn't just a goofball. He's like the goofball himbo golden retriever. Right. And, you know, Elise isn't just a sort of badass warrior. She's like the badass warrior. They're all kind of sort of a little bit of extremes of whatever it is their personality quirk is. And that's really fun to write, to lean into a personality trait or, you know, some kind of archetype and give each of them really different personalities, different voices, different goals and opinions. And just each time I'm writing them, really saying like, okay, I'm putting myself in this different headspace. What would they do that's true to them? Not just what sort of advances the story along or like furthers the main character's goals, but, you know, what would they say and think and do in this specific situation? And to me, that results in a much more interesting story in the long run, even if it's a little bit more convoluted to get there.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it. I love the convoluted way to get there. it helps to be immersed in the story and to have, to be invested. I think that's so important. Who would you say is your favorite side character?
I don't Taryn, know. Taryn, for sure. DC, everybody's favorite. Everyone loves him. He's so fun to write. He brings the light and the joy into some very kind of dark, sad situations. And so it's really fun to be able to pull myself out of the trauma or the sadness or, you know, whatever the main characters are going through and just have a little bit of levity, a little bit of fun. Taryn does have a lot of trauma of his own to work through for sure. And we especially are going to see that, you know, in the back half of the series, but what I just love about him is that he always can bring light to a situation. He can always sort of bring joy into it. And he's just the best friend you could hope to have. You know, he's such a loyal and fun friend to have around, and he's a joy to write.
Yeah, I can see that. And you alluded to some of that trauma, you know, in the series. Yeah. I'm in the middle of Heat right now, but
yeah,
I'm so excited for what is to come and to get to know his character a little bit better and maybe even his brother. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll definitely see more of him for sure.
Yeah. So what was that like too, of writing some of the trauma aspect and to really put yourself in their shoes? Did you draw from any personal experiences, or did you do research of like how, what are different responses to trauma? Because I mean, it is really trauma
informed. I've done a lot of research. I don't know that I have necessarily put, I think some of my experiences as a woman, I have put into the story a lot of just sort of, you know, unfairnesses and difficulties that I think many women have gone through are reflected in the story for sure. But I did do, there's some people in the story that are, you know, victims of child abuse when they were younger. And so I did a lot of research on that and like how siblings, you know, respond to that and can respond in different ways to that. And I wanted to make sure I was handling it sensitively and also accurately. There's, you know, grief. There's a big death in the series. There's a few big deaths in the series that really impact the characters that survive. And so I did a lot of research on that, on grief and how that can, you know, affect someone and how they respond to that. I think every character in the series probably has some trauma that they're working through at some point, but all different shades of it. And I think the most important thing about that is that everybody responds differently, right? There's not like one specific way. And so we see that in the book and it's discussed in the book, you know, there's characters that say, well, I wouldn't react that way, or I would never do this. And, you know, DM as our healer has to say, well, not everybody responds the same way. And you have to like give space for people to heal how they need to heal, which I think is a big theme through the series of just healing generally and how we heal from trauma and things that we, you know, endure throughout our lives.
Yeah. So well said. You're so articulate. I love the character arcs in this story and, you know, seeing how resiliency can help the characters too. And you're absolutely right with trauma. There are so many different responses, and in the therapy world, we do define trauma as anything that's had a lasting negative effect on your life. So it's a pretty broad, definition. And there is a lot of trauma, you know, in this series. Yeah. And I love, not that I love trauma, but I think it's so powerful seeing how these characters are impacted, you know, how they are impacted by trauma and how they, how it can be empowering, how they heal, and how we see, I mean, it also helps the plot too, right? Like it helps the story continue. And again, it also helps us to have empathy and connection with these characters. My husband a lot has to say, Kate, these books are not real. I'm like, but they are real. I feel it so much.
Yeah, I agree. It's huge for the plot. Like there's obviously the external factors of who they're fighting or, you know, whatever problem they're trying to solve. But I think that's just half the story. You know, the other half of the story is their internal, you know, thoughts and struggles, their interpersonal challenges with each other, how they recover from not just the stuff that happened in the story, but the past. Like the mortals are all dealing with generational trauma of this oppression. And that has had a very lasting impact, especially on, you know, characters like Henry or, you know, Teller and Diem that have grown up in that system. That is definitely traumatic. And that is not something you just get over really quickly. You know, even if the conditions are alleviated, the feelings from having to live with them stick with you. And so, you know, we see them struggle through some of that.
Yeah. Well, and the reality is that generational trauma, I mean, it's so real and how it impacts even on like a biological level. Like there's so many different factors with that and how it continues from generation to generation. And yeah, I mean, I think healing and I mean, getting out of the environment is one small step with the healing process with generational. What character do you think you connect the most with? I know you said side character for Taryn is one of your faves, or is your fave, but which character do you think you connect?
I don't think any of them are a lot of me. I think there's a little bit of me in many of them. I probably connect most with GM just because I think she's a woman that projects a lot of confidence and a lot of strength. And, you know, she seems very go-getter, very ballsy. But she's also deals with a lot of insecurity and a lot of self-doubt. And, you know, inside she's not nearly as brave and as confident as she projects. And I think many women can relate to that, especially women that do sort of are more outgoing or more sort of project confidence or self-assurance. There's still on the inside a woman who's second guessing everything and doubting herself and, you know, struggling with all of those insecurities that I think we all struggle with. And so I think I relate to her in that way of sort of being both sides of the coin. You know what I mean? Is of being able to be confident and outgoing, but also still having all of those same struggles and doubts internally that myself and a lot of my friends, you know, that's the reality of our lives. So I hear a lot that people find her relatable, which is the best compliment I think anyone could give me, because I did want her to be, I wanted people to see themselves in her, you know? So hopefully some people have.
Yeah. Well, I think all of these characters are relatable, you know, I mean, they're so, even though some of them are not human, you know what I'm saying? Like they're humanness.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. How long have you worked on the series? Cause you mentioned that you've written, you pre-wrote, correct, before you released, like you pre-wrote the first three?
Yes. And that took, I think, about 2 years that I worked on them. And I wrote them pretty quickly. I wrote book one in about a month or so, maybe 6 weeks. I wrote book two, I think, over the course of 2 to 3 months, maybe. And then I did work on book three for a long time. It was like 8 months it took me to write that one. But it was also just a lot of like some of the best advice that I got that is the hardest advice to follow was to write your story and set it aside and let it marinate and not touch it for a little while. That is incredibly hard to do, especially as an indie author where you control when your book is published. But it allowed me to do that because no one was telling me when's your next book coming out, where's the next book. I had no pressure on me to publish. And so that allowed me to have a little bit of space to set them aside and think about it and marinate on it and make a lot of changes based on that. So about 2 years worth of working on it, even though a lot of that was not writing, but more like editing and just sort of thinking about the world and what I had already written.
Yeah. What a commitment.
Yeah. I mean, your
heart is in this series. You've poured, it sounds like, so much of yourself into this.
I think every author does. I mean, that it's just, that's the process. Right. I shouldn't say every, but for most of the authors I know, it's a very personal process of just pouring yourself onto the page and, you know, exploring a lot of your own issues, you know, insecurities, you know, worries, fears, all of that through your characters. It's a really emotional but rewarding process.
Can I ask you what insecurities or fears have you worked on through, or do you feel like that you had to confront as you were writing this series?
I mean, I think a lot of just feeling like not good enough, like, you know, DM in the various roles that she plays throughout the series, I think deals with like, I don't deserve this. There's other more deserving people. There's more competent people. There's people working harder than me or that probably earn this, you know, deserve this more than I do. And you know, just kind of that feeling of like, do I belong here? Should I really be here? And also just, you know, that feeling of belonging. Diem is caught in between a lot of different communities, none of which she fits perfectly in. You know, she doesn't fit perfectly with the mortals because she kind of had this very sheltered upbringing that her mother sort of kept her away from the worst of it. She obviously doesn't fit into the Descended for a lot of reasons. You know, and there's all these different groups that Diem interacts with over the course of the series, and none of them are really her place. And I think she spends a lot of the book trying to find, like, where's my place and my people? And she collects this very motley group of people from all different walks of life that become her people. And that's been my experience as well. Like, I, you know, I've lived in a lot of places, I've done a lot of things. And I think a lot of that is just trying to find, where is my place in the world and where are my people? And just collecting them as I go, you know, finding the few people that you really click with and holding tight to them as your life kind of changes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's beautiful. Well, Pen, you belong absolutely in this community. I hope that you feel that and all the support and love from your readers. I mean, yeah, good. And it sounds like, I mean, yeah, with Diem and there's definitely found family tropes. And that sense of connection and belonging, it's interesting that I feel like it mirrors some of your experiences too, and finding your place and, you know, and your passion and being able to live that out. And
yeah. And, you know, there's definitely a found family in this, but there also is a real family. And sometimes it's one or the other, right? In these series, you get either family members or there is no family and they have to sort of build their own. And I think what's nice about Diem's journey is she has both. She has family that she's very close with and very loyal to and would do anything for, but she does have issues, right? There are family conflicts and dramas and those issues. And she also has her found family of her friends and people that she would also do anything for. And those two sides come together. And I think it's nice to see not an either or situation, but kind of a both, and the different issues and conflicts that can arise in both of those situations. That's been an interesting aspect to play with.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I feel like you're really trying not to give us spoilers right now. Watching you talk, I'm like, is there a spoiler there that I can read into? But so you've written the books. Can we talk a little bit about the process of being an indie writer some more? So you mentioned being a plotter versus a pantser.
Yes, I'm big time plotter. Before I wrote a word, I had all four books plotted out. I had, you know, down to the scenes and the chapters and certain little bits of dialogue. And I just, for me personally, I mean, every author is different and some people can do this. For me personally, I couldn't really build a super intricate world with a lot of different sort of interwoven plot lines without really planning it in advance. I'm just not good enough at doing it on the fly. I need to plan. And so I also really wanted this series to be for the rereaders. I love rereading a series and I love picking up on little bits the second or third time you read through that you realize, oh my God, we had the answer from the very beginning, or, you know, we knew this all along and we didn't even know it. And in order to accomplish that, I really had to sit down and think about, where is this going? Now, of course, once you start writing, anything can happen. Stuff goes off the rails very quickly, very often. So I did give myself the freedom to allow things to change as I wrote. But I had kind of those sort of bounds of where I wanted to go with the story and the big points of what needed to happen so that I could sort of play in the middle.
Earlier, you were saying of writing the story and then setting it aside. I would have a hard time with that too. I mean, I can imagine like getting excited about a series and really invested in the characters, the plot, and wanting to keep. So what is the reasoning, I guess, behind that advice to write it and then set it aside and let it marinate? What's the purpose of that?
You know, I'm a big believer that our subconscious processes things, you know, when we're not actively thinking about them. And I some of my best ideas happen when I'm not thinking about my book or working on my book. You know, I'm washing my hair in the shower or, you know, cleaning my house or something. And then all of a sudden, boom, I get this idea how to fix the big issue that I've been wrestling with. It never comes when I'm sitting down actively thinking about it. It always just comes at a random moment. And so I think that giving our brains some space to process everything we've written and process the story allows us to think about things on a different level than we have been when we're actively working on it. And I, at least for me, I know that that's true because almost everything that people say they love from Spark in particular was stuff I added after that period of letting it rest. It was, you know, when I came back to the book after a few months and I realized, okay, I need to add, you know, this, 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 and this. Those are all of the things that people point out as their favorite scenes or their favorite lines or aspects of the story. It's so hard to do, but I do think it's really beneficial writing advice to just give your story some time to breathe before you jump straight into editing them or publishing them or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that really paid off for you.
Yeah.
Some really, I mean, yeah, there are some I've in my Kindle just highlighted so much, so many amazing quotes and dialogue, and I can imagine that not rushing the process really helped, yeah, develop those scenes and those conversations and the dialogue and the character development. I mean, all the things.
Right.
So,
yeah, especially early on in my first few books. You know, now that I'm a little bit more experienced, I am a little bit better about thinking about that stuff as I'm working on it. But writing my first, you know, two or three books, I think it was really helpful to just take my time and not rush the process and allow those stories to grow, because it was a new process and I had a lot to learn, you know, and giving myself space to learn those things was, I think, really helpful.
How long did it take you to write Burn then? Because is that fully completed, Burn?
Burn,
oh, can we talk about
been,
that?
I can talk about Burn. Burn has been probably about a year, honestly, in the making. I have not been actively working on it for a year, but in bits and pieces, that's one of the things I had to learn as an indie author, is writing book one and writing book four are just night and day different experiences. Writing book one, it just came right out. The story, I wrote it super quickly. I didn't really have to think about it very much because it was new, and every decision I was making, I didn't have to rely on what I'd done in the past. You know what I mean? I could just make decisions on the fly. With Burn, every single chapter has probably 15 to 20 points I need to hit and little arc things, because every character has an arc that has to be resolved by the end of the book. And, you know, but I also want to make sure the chapters flow and that they don't feel like you're just hitting, you know, 15 to 20 points, you know, by rapid hitting various plot aspects. And, you know, as I've been writing the books, I have been able to say, well, that doesn't quite fit in the scene. I'll deal with it later. I can't do that anymore. This is later. So everything has to be resolved. I don't like to leave. I don't like stories where things are left unresolved. I don't want to write a story where things are left unresolved. So I want to give every character the end that they deserve. And that has just been a really time-consuming process. I've loved it for sure, but it's been, you know, it takes me 3 or 4 days to finish a chapter, whereas when I was writing Spark, I could do 2 or 3 chapters in a day. It's just a very different experience.
That makes a ton of sense too. I mean, because we've built such a complex world and these complex characters that you would need to be very intentional of like completing, you want to, which I think is beautiful too, that you want to do their character justice and complete their story and all the things. But with the complex world that you have of like staying consistent probably too, making sure that everything is aligning and holy Hannah,
when I have writing Burn, I had books 1, 2, and 3 on my screen because I'm just constantly referencing them and who said what and, you know, what have we addressed? What have we revealed or not revealed? So yeah, it's been finishing a series is much more difficult than I anticipated, but also super, super rewarding because we're getting to see all of these things that we've laid out over the last 3 books come to fruition. Characters finding the resolution to their traumas and their challenges is also really nice.
Gosh, I cannot wait. I think I've seen some writers or authors have like what they call Bibles of like their characters' like names and then like a little brief background to say on top of that. Or do you, I mean, because you mentioned having the first 3 books in front of you to reference, do you have it all in one place or is it just, I don't know. I was just curious about that.
I that's one thing I'll do differently for sure in the next series is a much more comprehensive world Bible. I do have a document that has, you know, things like each realm and the name of their, you know, king or queen, the name of their Gryffindor and like their eye color, their magic and, you know, who's related to who in what way, you know, all those kind of like facts. But I do wish I had kept a more comprehensive, just Bible of more personal things and, interactions between the characters, you know. I'm trying to not spoil too many things. I'm like talking around certain things, but for the most part, I've done it in my head. I think moving forward, I will try and do more of a world Bible and have it more on paper moving forward.
Yeah, I can't imagine like keeping it all in my head or whatever. I can't imagine creating a series like this though. So I'm like, you're amazing.
It helps that I'm only writing this one series. I think most authors will write several different worlds at once or at least more than one. I can't do that. I am a one track mind kind of person. I cannot even really think about what's next until this is done. I've been living, breathing, eating, sleeping this world for what, like 3, almost 4 years now. So that's, it helps that that's all I think about is this world. And that's all I have to hold on to.
Yeah. Well, and I think that speaks to your commitment and like it, and I can imagine too, how hard it's going to be to say goodbye or to, yeah.
Yeah. How emotional that might be.
I imagine a lot.
It feels like I have cried every single day of writing Burn, I think. I mean, just seeing number one, the characters are just going through a lot right now. We're in, you know, there's a plot structure called the Hero's Journey that the series kind of follows. And where we're at when Burn starts is this part called, you know, the dark night of the soul. And it's when everything is terrible, you know, everything has gone wrong. No one is happy. It just seems bleak. And so that's where we're at with a lot of the characters when the book opens is that things are just really bad and they're not really sure how they're going to get out of it yet. And so that has been tough because I love these characters and seeing them hurt, even though I'm the one that put them there, it's not fun. However hard a reader cries, I guarantee you I cried harder. I guarantee you. So yeah, it's been a lot. Big emotional journey for sure.
I was going to say the emotional depths that these characters go to, I can imagine that you... I mean, that a part of you has to access some of those feelings too in order to write it.
Yeah, for sure. There's some scenes I can't. I like to write in chronological order. I don't jump around when I write. But that means that when I get to a sad scene or, you know, an angry scene or whatever, I have to be in that headspace. And my poor sweet husband has to deal with it. Because if something really sad happens, I have to make myself sad, basically, and just be really down. And that bleeds over into my real life for sure. If I've written something really sad, I'm going to be really down that week or, you know, those few days that I'm writing it.
Yeah, you're going to feel it. I mean, I think your empathy has to be so strong. Like emotional IQ has to be so high in order to be able to write this series. I mean, because of, yeah, the emotional range of these characters. And I love them.
Thanks.
But how have you then navigated working on this novel with like other real life, not saying this is other life responsibilities? Like, did you work while doing this? Or, I mean, you're married, right?
Not well, I'll tell you that. I am not the poster child for a good work-life balance. I have always, it's just always been my personality that when I'm working on something, I just throw myself into it and I am doing it 24/7. That's just who I am as a person. Not, I don't recommend it. It's not healthy. And so, yeah, for this, I had both the privilege of being able to do this full time really early on, but it was also because I was unemployed and I couldn't find a job. So I kind of was forced into it a little bit of going full time, probably earlier than most that I would recommend people doing it. But it was a blessing in disguise because it really allowed me to sort of, you know, immerse myself and have that one track mind, which is where I work best. I have not balanced real life super well with it. And it's an ongoing struggle, especially now with the books being out and being relatively successful. I think I'm super grateful that the book has taken off and that it has really found its reader base very quickly, which is not normal for indie authors. But it's been a real adjustment for me in managing, because I, you know, before the books were out, I just wrote all day long and I was able to put myself in the story for 8+ hours a day without interruption. And that's just not realistic now. You know, there's a lot of other things that have to be done to manage, you know, an author career. So I'm still working on that, still trying to find my place, balancing all of that. Yeah, it's an emotional career just generally as an author, putting yourself out there. You know, there's a lot of feedback. There's a lot of opinions on, you know, what you wrote. And that's something you have to learn to accept and deal with if you're going to put your work out there for people to read. And also just, I think every single author I know struggles with imposter syndrome so much and struggles with feeling like their work isn't good enough, no matter how successful the author is. I mean, some of the most successful best-selling authors I know came this close to deleting their best-selling books a week before, you know, publication because they were certain it was terrible. And for me, like, I felt that way with Glow. And I think Glow is most people's favorite book in the series.
It's my favorite.
Yeah. Most people, I think, love Glow. And for me, that's the one I felt least confident about. I came so close to just not publishing it and saying, I need to redo this book because I don't think it's good. it did really, really well. So the emotional roller coaster of the industry on top of the emotional roller coaster of the story and what the characters are going through is just... it's a lot. It's fun.
It sounds brutal.
It is a little brutal. I mean, it's fun. Every day's new. But yeah, it is. It can be a lot.
Yeah. How have you dealt with some of that feedback? You know, I did want to ask you and talk about this, and if you don't want to talk about it, that's totally okay. But the pushing back pushing back burn and what that process was like for you, and if you've had any negative feedback, because I think in your posts, I reread it before joining you today and you were like, I'm so sorry if anybody's mad at me. I'm like, who would be upset with her for this? Like,
that has been the darkest period, I think, of the writing journey for me is pushing it twice now. Because I just don't want to disappoint people. And I like, the readers have put so much trust in me and they have taken a chance on me, especially as a debut author that has no like history. And I feel so indebted to all of the readers who have taken a chance on me and my book. that I just care so, so much about, like, honoring that by giving them a good story and, you know, being an author they can rely on and trust. And so damaging that trust by not keeping my release date was just super, super hard for me. And I mean, everybody in my life will tell you I got like maybe 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night for like a month, just trying to like keep that date because I really wanted to. And, you know, a couple people very close to me had to sit me down and say, like, you're not doing your best work, number one. So you're not really honoring the story. And you're also driving yourself into the ground. So it's time to pull the cord. It's time to accept defeat and just, you know, accept the consequences. And I think that's the right decision in the end, even though it was really difficult. I think years from now, what will matter is if I told the story right and if I did the characters justice. And if people are angry with me, they have every right to be, and I don't judge them for that at all or criticize them.
I'm judging them. I'm so sorry. But I do not be mad at Penn, people.
I do think readers should be able to trust release dates, and they should be able to, you know, rely on books coming out when authors say they're going to come out, which is why in the future I'm not going to set release dates until the book is, like, done and ready to go. If people are going to be angry with me, that's just something I have to accept. But ultimately, the most important thing is telling the right story. And that's just going to take however long it's going to take. And I'm learning as I go. I'm making mistakes. That's okay. A lot of authors have a series that no one reads and they get to make those mistakes early on. I'm very, very lucky to have a lot of readers reading my debut series, but it also means I'm making my mistakes, you know, in front of a lot more people. So pros and cons.
Yeah, I can imagine the pressure feels more intense for your experience. And Penn, can I ask, you tend to be more of a perfectionist too?
Oh, yeah.
Or
oh, okay. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't speak for all of for the readers, you know, but my hope is that you're taking care of yourself. And if you can't take care of yourself, then the story isn't going to come. I can imagine, like, you are the tool, right? And there needs to be some self-care and boundaries and rest and all the things. And I hope that you're feeling support from the readers too.
I definitely am. Everyone has been so, so kind and supportive and wonderful. So that has been a big relief that, you know, 99% of people have been just very supportive. And I think in general, this community, they give, you know, what they get, right? So if you give kindness and understanding and respect to people, for the most part, you get it in return. Of course, there's always going to be like the tiny fraction.
Outliers.
Of people. But yes. In my experience, I have found that most people, as long as I'm kind and understanding and compassionate with them, they return that to me. So that has been a very positive thing. And I do feel really supported, and I really, really appreciate everyone that has sent like a kind note and said nice things. That means a lot to me.
Yeah. That you're feeling the love and the support. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say, I feel like I've met so many kind and compassionate readers through Instagram. And I think that is a beautiful perspective of what you're giving out to the community. It's also kind of what you're receiving. And I don't know. I know too, with perfectionism, it can feel like nothing is enough and the keep striving for that. And if you're giving out compassion to others, I hope that you're also giving that to yourself too.
But that is a tougher struggle, but I try. I mean, I'm not the type to sort of linger on decisions. I will do as much as I can to make the right decision in the moment, research it, consider everything. But then when a decision is made, you have to move on and you have to just accept the consequences. So, you know, that's kind of the thing, is I just have to let things go and focus on next steps. And, you know,
I think that's all that you can do, because we can't control, you know, we can only control what we can control, and other people's responses ultimately isn't our responsibility. But I think I definitely hear that piece of like you're wanting to be intentional and thoughtful for the readers, and you have created such a wonderful base, reader base, I guess. Yeah. And you're wanting to hope, I don't know, to build trust there. And I trust you. I know that this is going to come out and everything that you're working on. And I don't know that it's going to come together nicely, you know, with the characters. So I can't wait. But no pressure. Don't put any more pressure on.
Soon, very soon.
As much as I love it, I also respect your boundaries too. Who are some of like, do you have any like book, like crushes, character crushes? This is such a random question. Or like within your own series, like.
For sure. I love a strong woman, obviously. I love, you know, Aelin from Throne of Glass is my girl. I love a girl with a sense of humor. I love a girl that's very confident, that holds her own. So pretty much any woman like that. I love, like, she's so controversial, but I love Tori from Zodiac Academy because she's just.
I haven't read that series yet.
Oh, it's a wild ride. The wildest ride you will ever go on in a book. It is crazy. And anybody who's read it, I'm sure, is listening right now going, yep, it's wild. Any character that just, I think, is really a female character that's just really strong and kind of like takes no crap. I love that because as women in this world, we don't get to do that very much. And the women who do it often are punished for it. So seeing it happen, I hear a lot of criticism of like, well, a lot of female main characters are this way in this genre. You get a lot of the kind of badass, like strong women. And I think there's a reason for that. I think it's because in our world, we don't get that as much. We aren't allowed to have those women, or if we do, they get suppressed and pushed down and worked against. And so it's so fun as, you know, female authors, especially, to write those characters and let them succeed and let people respect them for those traits, right? Not despite them, but because of them. And so for me, those are always really fun stories to read. For men, I'm a sucker for the, like, I married a golden retriever. He is like, he's the absolute most golden retriever of human beings ever. Just sweet, nice, happy-go-lucky guy. And so I love to read the opposite of my books. Nobody's not listening. Just the like grumpiest, crankiest, like misanthrope. I hate everyone. I hate the entire world except for her. Like, she's the only one that I like. I will do anything for her. I'm a sucker for that trope. So any character like that is just, I wouldn't want to marry one in real life, but in my books, great.
Amazing. No, and I think that's what's so wonderful about these worlds that you guys are creating. We can live kind of vicariously in these worlds. And I think that's very intuitive of you and very spot on about these women characters and how in real world it's not that way, you know, and women get labeled, you know, unfortunate labels for being strong, you know, and having a voice. And yeah, but anyway, and I think it's interesting that Aelin is one of your favorite characters because DM kind of reminds me a little bit of her. And Aelin is brilliant and DM is brilliant, you know, and
I'm not sure I would label DM as brilliant.
She tries. And I think sometimes she's a little misguided, but she's, I don't know. I think, yeah.
She does not always make the smart. I think Aelin always makes the wise decision. Maybe not the wise.
Okay.
But she, in the end, it ends up being wise, right? In the moment you think, Aelin's like, what are you doing? And then it ends up.
What are you doing, girl?
With him, she's just making every mistake that there is to make, I think, making every decision wrong. But she does it very confidently. And she, I think, leads with her heart a lot. I mean, she just cares so much about even people who don't deserve it. And she's always leading. She's a healer at heart. That's a big theme in the story, I think, is Diem is a healer. And even though she's trying to get away from that, because she associates that with like being when she was young and sort of just wanting to follow her mother. And now she wants to go do her own thing. But that really is who she is inside, too. And, you know, she wants to heal the world. She wants to heal all these traumas that everyone has. And she's just a fundamentally like good, annoyingly good person, I think. It gets her in a lot of trouble. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of similarities in the sense of them being like funny and witty, and just because I love banter. But I do think they maybe
there are some differences too.
Yeah, yeah. Diem's very smart and competent, and Diem is trying her best.
She's trying her best. She is. Okay, and then some of the scenes, I hope it's okay to talk about this too. I think in a post you mentioned that Burn is going to be a little bit spicier, steamier. Did you say that in a post?
Yeah,
or no?
It is. I mean, I don't want to give away too much, but there's...
Okay, don't give away too much. There's more. But what was that like writing those scenes?
Weird. It's very, very strange. I think some people love writing those scenes. I'm not really one of them. They're like my children. These characters are like, Diem's like my daughter. Luther's like my son. It's weird for me to like I haven't yet commissioned any like not safe for work art because it's just, there's like a block in my head that these are my children and that's weird for me. I try to approach the spicy scenes as more of an emotional thing. You know, it's less about, don't get me wrong. I love a smutty book. I absolutely love a good, super spicy read for sure. But for me and my series and what I like to write, for me, it's so much more about the emotional connection or how they're using sex. I think Diem in a lot of ways uses sex as a escapism tool to sort of not deal with the problems, you know, just sort of ignore her problems. I think she uses sex a lot in that way as a distraction from stuff she doesn't want to face. You know, for other characters, it's a really like emotional connecting thing. And so I try and really focus on it in that way, less about the actual like steamy, sexy parts.
Yeah.
Those are fun. Mm-hmm. And more about what does this scene do for their relationship and each of them individually, emotionally.
I've spoken with other authors who have said something similar too. And I can imagine too, for your series, these scenes also help. Yeah. I mean, it helps their character development and their connection, the relationship, maybe even some sense of belonging too. And it helps the story along.
And, you know, especially for there is no more intimate situation, right? There is nothing more intimate than that. And so we see the characters unclothed, both physically and sort of emotionally and just figuratively, right? We, especially somebody like Luther, who has a shield up, he has sort of his cold, aloof, like, I don't show myself to anyone really. And so in, you know, some of these scenes, we get to see who he is like at his core, because he's no longer putting on a mask. He's no longer sort of wearing the costume of the prince. Who is he, you know, at his most raw and exposed? And I love seeing that. I love how we get to see him, like the real true Luther inside. And, you know, the same with Henry, the same with Diem and any other character in these situations. Like we see them truly as they are in those scenes and not putting on a front for the world.
Who are some of your literary like heroes? Who do you enjoy reading?
This is tough because I have so many author friends now and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
I'll keep
some of it to myself. But I will say one at least that I read many, many, many years ago when I was first getting into the genre. I mean, like 20 years ago, I was way too young to be reading these kind of books at the time. But There's an author, her name's Jacqueline Carey. She wrote a series called Cush She'll Start. And for me, it is kind of, I see her as like the mother of romanticism. It existed before her for sure, and there have been other great authors, but she was the first one I read, and she was very large at a time where the genre was not very large. Fantasy has not been traditionally a super woman-friendly genre, and for a very long time, you almost couldn't get published unless you were writing for a male audience. And so for me, she was the first fantasy book that I read that was written by a woman, with a woman in the lead, dealing with women's issues, clearly written for a female audience, that was very sexy, but it was also very political. It dealt with, you know, enemies to lovers and all these tropes that now have become ubiquitous, but at the time were not quite so common. And I just fell in love with it. I thought, this is my genre. This is where I want to be in the fantasy world, but telling women's stories, you know, from a female perspective for women audiences, or at least predominantly women. And I have been a lover of romanticism ever since. And what I love about her stuff is it's so timeless. And now she actually, in August, just released 23 years, I think, after the initial series was released, she just released a new book from the love interest POV, because romanticism is kind of becoming hot again. And so her series is becoming hot again. And it's a really fun full circle moment to have this book that I read that inspired me to write in the genre have a resurgence and have that author be back on everyone's lips again. And that was definitely a very formational reading experience for me within the genre, for sure.
That is so incredible. And I'm so glad that you found that series so that it could help inspire you to write for women readers. And
I mean, I was of giving up on fantasy because they're just, I didn't feel like there was much for me, you know, in the genre. When you look at the big fantasy staples, it's men's stories for men, and they're great stories. They're wonderful stories, not knocking them at all, but just, I feel like they're not for me, you know what I mean? And there's an aspect to them of, well, where are the women in this world? What are they doing? You know, what struggles are they facing that you just don't see very much? So I love that path, you know, that she and other authors kind of in that time frame carved that path for women to say, no, we belong in fantasy too. And our stories are also important. I just love that.
Yeah, I love that too. And what, can you repeat the name of the series again?
It's
and her
name? Cushiel's Dart is the first book in the trilogy. I'm not sure what the series name is, but Jacqueline Carey, fantastic author, fantastic series.
I think there is something so powerful of, you know, as being a reader and then finding a series or a book that you genuinely connect with and that feels accessible to you. And I agree. I mean, I don't think I really read fantasy before even Outlander. You know, I think Outlander was probably what got me into the romanticism world as an escape and to be able to connect with these strong women characters. And
yeah, there's a few, I think, I like to call them like gatekeeper series, right? That ACOTAR is a huge one that you just hear over and over and over again. People say, this got me back into reading, or this got me into fantasy. You know, it's the first one I've ever read. I think Fourth Wing is that for a lot of people as well. And these series that people who never tried fantasy before are trying them and saying, oh, there's a place for me in fantasy. You know, what I saw on screen, which was like Lord of the Rings or whatever, what didn't feel like it was for me, but this does. And I love that this resurgence of romanticism and these, you know, big series that are reaching out into audiences well beyond the traditional fantasy reader are just bringing so many people, number one, back to reading, period, which is fantastic, but especially reading fantasy and especially bringing women into fantasy, because that's just great, a great place for us to be.
Yes, I agree. Well, Pen, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk with me. What time is it in Paris right now?
It is 8:30 p.m.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
And everyone, you can find, yes, you guys can find her book Spark on Amazon, any big retailer, right?
Yeah.
Her website. Her
books are sold, hopefully.
Uh-huh. And, you know, and even my neighborhood bookstore had these.
Oh,
so that
good.
Was really nice.
I love that. As an indie author, it's really, my books are not in a lot of physical bookstores. So every time I hear that somebody sees one in an actual bookstore, it's so exciting for me because that's pretty rare for indies.
Yes, I bet that is really exciting. And but yeah, you're making a big name for yourself and the community. Anyway, so you guys can find her book there, and we'll be on the lookout for any other announcements for Burn. And I hope that you continue the self-care.
Thank you so
much. No rush. Don't rush the process. But thank you so much, Pen. And I hope you have a good rest of your evening.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this interview with Pen Cole, author of the Kindred Curse series. I hope you loved it as much as I did. I love Pen. This was so much fun. And I'm definitely fangirling that I spoke with her. And I'm so honored to share this conversation with you guys, and hope that you felt part of the convo as well. So thank you so much for joining my podcast, focused on celebrating and promoting authors who write fanciful stories that make my heart sing. Also, if you're feeling generous, please feel free to leave a 5-star rating and review, maybe like and subscribe. Thank you so much for being here and helping celebrate these amazing authors. Next week, I'll be back with another author, and I can't wait to share that interview too. So thank you so much, guys.